unelected deep state operatives who defy the voters to push their own secret agendas.
It's all about power. In the end, it's about power, and it's secret power. And it gives you enormous control and ability to manipulate.
The deep state has an enormous amount of power.
You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you.
They know that presidents come and go every 4 years or every 8 years, but they're going to be there for decades. And that's what we should be worried about.
The CIA all but declared full out war on the Trump presidency.
How does a democracy survive?
The intelligence agencies have run amok. They've run amok.
There are groups of people with tremendous power who have incredible influence on almost every nation. We don't know exactly what they're up to and have hardly any ability to stop them doing whatever they like. They torture and kill, overthrow countries, traffic drugs, undermine our politicians and can spy on almost everyone. America's intelligence agencies, the CIA, NSA and FBI wield near limitless power and operate mostly in secret. They're often referred to as the deep state. Lately, serious questions have been raised by those on all sides of the political spectrum about what these agencies are doing, whether they're working against the people they're supposed to serve. US President Donald Trump claims the deep state has been working to undermine him, the democratically elected leader of the free world. Tonight, Sky News is putting a spotlight on these organisations operating in the dark. We're separating the conspiracy theories from the documented facts. Is there a cabal, as President Trump claims, working to undermine America's democracy? Have the intelligence agencies become too powerful, too invasive, and need to be reined in? In this special report, we speak with former spies, politicians, and investigative journalists who will help us explore the deep state.
This is how Russia battered open the door of Berlin in the last weeks of April, the city's last days as the capital of Hitler's Reich.
In the remnants of a ravaged continent came a new world order. Following the Second World War, the United States adopted the role of global mediator and enforcer, not just bulking up its military, but creating organisations to influence other nations. The National Security Act of 1947 established the National Security Council and the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, America's international spying arm.
The United States has, over the past 70 years, built up a U.S. government that is charged with ensuring national security. And that has, of course, had an intelligence component, a military component, a diplomatic component, and more.
The U.S. Congress would allocate the CIA billions each year, but its entire budget never publicly disclosed. During its early years, the agency's main focus was on battling communism, spying on the Soviets, carrying out armed operations in Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and Indonesia, helping overthrow Iran's government in 1953. The CIA was particularly busy in Latin America too, backing coups or rebel groups in Chile, Brazil, Peru, Guatemala, Dominican Republic, Nicaragua, Panama, Paraguay, and Uruguay.
The United States government and the United States intelligence agencies do a lot of things abroad. They have, like a lot of other countries, been involved in covert matters, in matters involving sort of pursuing America's objectives in countries from Iran to Nicaragua, from Mexico to Russia. All of these countries the United States has been involved in.
Though many of these operations were commissioned by the White House, the CIA was scorned by the US press, public, and politicians. President John F. Kennedy reportedly said he wanted to splinter the CIA in 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds, while his predecessor gave this stark warning about powerful, shadowy groups.
in the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
The National Security Agency was created in 1952 to gather intelligence within the United States. The much older Federal Bureau of Investigation also pushed, and some say overstepped, the boundaries of acceptable behaviour, spying on protest groups and political parties, attempting to infiltrate newsrooms, and infamously threatening civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr.
These agencies were supposed to exist only in times of national emergency, or at least function and grow only in times of national emergency when there was an actual enemy that they were fighting. And instead, they just kind of become these permanent appendages of the U.S. government that inexorably grow in their power and authority, and nobody can control or stop them.
Details of the overall United States intelligence budget are classified. Estimates range from $50 to $80 billion a year. Congressional oversight groups, including the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, are tasked with keeping these agencies in check, though they aren't always given operational details.
In the wake of Watergate and a lot of the overstepping that was done by U.S. intelligence agencies at home, the U.S. Congress has taken a pretty advanced role in trying to oversee how our intelligence communities are run and managed.
But that oversight is too weak for critics who claim these agencies make up a shadow unelected government, a deep state.
There's a faction in Washington that is immune to elections and that exercises enormous amounts of power and doesn't come and go depending upon any vote, but stays for years and even decades. They're the Pentagon, the intelligence community led by the CIA, law enforcement agencies like the FBI.
70 million people lost their lives in the Second World War. Nations were redrawn. Millions were displaced. It was a fragile peace in a fractured world. The creation of the CIA and other US intelligence agencies was meant to maintain order and prevent more mass death. But at what cost? How powerful have these agencies become? And are they under control?
The nature of our intelligence community is such that you have the leadership of CIA and FBI and NSA and other organizations that have been there for 20 and 30 and 35 years. They know that presidents come and go every 4 years or every 8 years, but they're going to be there for decades. And that's what we should be worried about.
Finding out exactly what these U.S. intelligence agencies, or deep state, are currently doing isn't easy. Their operations are carried out in secret. Scant details are provided to very few politicians. Their stated purpose is to collect, analyse, and evaluate intelligence and pass that information on to the US president and policymakers. According to critics, they do much more than that. They claim agents in the field lie, cheat, steal, torture, and kill. They interfere with elections, infiltrate governments, and spy on the public under the guise of protecting citizens and the national interest. We know this thanks to whistleblowers. Former spies who were so disturbed by what they witnessed, they sacrificed their freedoms to expose the illegal behaviour of the deep state. Two whistleblowers spoke with Sky News about their experiences and the deep state's current operations. Tonight, they help us peer behind the top secret curtain.
I would end up having to defend the Constitution against my own government in secret.
Thomas Drake never meant to rock the boat, and the Air Force veteran never thought he'd ever be considered a traitor. He joined the National Security Agency to help protect his country. His first day, September 11, 2001.
The day frozen forever in my mind, as it is for a number of us.
We have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers.
There it is. Oh. There it is. The plane went right through the other tower of the World Trade Center.
In that moment, I knew that we were under attack. I even said that as I stood up. And everything had changed in an instant.
Drake claims U.S. intelligence agencies used the terror attacks to dramatically increase their own powers. And while working in the NSA, he discovered President George W. Bush had ordered the agency to spy on American citizens in an unprecedented and unconstitutional mass surveillance program dubbed Operation Stellar Wind.
We were in total violation of the Constitution, but it's like the Constitution didn't matter, set it aside. It's in the way of national security. And we don't need it anymore.
Our second whistleblower is a former spy. John Kiriakou travelled the world during his 14 years as a CIA agent. He, too, saw a startling shift in the way US agencies acted after 9/11. As CIA's chief of counter-terror operations in Pakistan in 2002, he was offered to be trained to torture prisoners.
I was never a believer in violating international law or the laws of human rights, and we're signatories to the United Nations Convention Against Torture. Torture is a violation of U.S. law as well, and I simply wasn't willing to do it.
After raising his concerns with his superiors to little effect, he went to the press.
Did you feel comfortable with the techniques?
Frankly, no.
Kiriakou would be arrested for exposing the illegal torture program. He spent nearly 2 years behind bars and claims no one was punished for the torture program itself.
I had never felt so alone in my entire life. I was blessed at the time with a wife who was incredibly supportive. That changed later. But she was supportive at the time. And she told me, you have to fight this and you have to embrace it. She said, they have consistently underestimated your strength and you have to fight them because you've done nothing wrong.
According to Kiriakou, Drake and other whistleblowers, there are three main focuses in the deep state's playbook: surveillance, foreign influence, and domestic control. Operation Stellar Wind, which Thomas Drake exposed, is but one NSA mass surveillance program. Fellow former NSA worker Edward Snowden revealed several US telephone and internet companies have been providing the NSA with virtually all of its customers' records. The so-called PRISM program gives the NSA easy access to Google, Facebook, Microsoft, and Apple servers.
Essentially entailed a device that was put into the data centers of every major internet company, and this box allowed analysts at the CIA and NSA to essentially track any user that they wanted to.
Leaked documents revealed the X-Key Score program, which allows the NSA to search nearly everything a user does on the internet through data it intercepts across the world.
That's all NSA does, practically, is spy on Americans. They intercept literally every phone call, every text message, every email from every American in the country. And they have enough computer storage space at two massive facilities, one in the state of Utah, one in the state of Maryland, to save every one of those documents and its metadata, or calls and its metadata, for the next 500 years.
Drake claims Australians should be concerned, as our intelligence agencies work hand in hand with their American counterparts under the Five Eyes Intelligence Sharing Agreement.
History's not kind when it comes to the erosion of rights and freedoms and liberties. I mean, these are extraordinarily precious, and any attempt to take them away, it's very hard to get them back. You don't have to go back too far in the 20th century to know what the dark history is when that occurs.
The deep state is believed to be engaged in many other morally questionable activities abroad. According to the Washington Post, the CIA funded rebel groups in Syria. US agencies directly fund pro-Western political groups around the world. And military analysts claim CIA fingerprints are all over opposition movements in Venezuela and Iran.
Intelligence services of the United States have acted around the world, both probably in terms of forcing political outcomes. All countries seek to do this. Russia seeks to do it in this country. America is probably doing it in Venezuela as well. Whether it's good or bad depends upon where you sit politically.
The deep state, our whistleblowers argue, is also intent on controlling politics at home.
I think the deep state aims really are to maintain the status quo. And if you're not going to maintain the status quo, if that's going to change at all, that it should change in the direction of more power for the deep state.
News media is arguably the most effective platform to promote this. Intelligence bosses, who critics claim openly lied to the public.
Does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
It does not.
Not wittingly.
Are then being touted as trustworthy TV pundits after leaving office.
Is he just cannot get his head around the fact of the Russian meddling, when the evidence for which was just overwhelming.
Now you have these news outlets essentially merging with these agencies. You can't watch MSNBC or CNN without every 5 minutes seeing multiple operatives from these agencies informing the public or purporting to inform the public about the news. And it's obviously incredibly disturbing because these are agencies that specialize in misinformation, disinformation, propaganda.
The Freedom of the Press Association claims intelligence agencies have also gone to great lengths to censor critical stories.
On many, many occasions, intelligence agencies have threatened newspapers, have claimed that they will have blood on their hands, have used various methods to try to get them from publishing newsworthy and important information that the public should know.
The deep state's sway on social media is strengthening too.
The relationship that intelligence agencies have to these internet platforms that we use every day has changed. Whereas before, a lot of it was focused on surveillance and things that like that, it is actually now much more about shaping content online or restricting content online. The end result of this has been to integrate even more closely these internet giants into this kind of national security establishment.
This may be the tip of the iceberg. Despite the brave efforts of whistleblowers, we likely won't ever know the extent of the deep state's nefarious actions. Its supporters claim intelligence agencies' activities are vitally preventing attacks and saving lives. Though do the ends justify the means?
Secrecy breeds arrogance. Secrecy breeds a lot of behaviors that normally would be held accountable in an open, an open and transparent environment. And that's what makes this even more dangerous, is when you have agencies who believe they can hide themselves behind the blanket and the convenience of national security.
Donald Trump believes the deep state is trying to take him down. The US president claims those within the agencies, which are supposed to work for him, are working against him. In tweets and speeches, he's blamed the deep state for the Russia probe, media leaks, the multiple wars the US is involved in, and the current impeachment push. Trump is credited with the resurgence of the idea of the deep state. But does this conspiracy theory have any basis in fact? Is the deep state actually undermining the leader of the free world?
Deep state holes and their fake news allies.
There is an establishment, both in foreign policy and also in the intelligence community. And in the intelligence community, it truly is the deep state.
The deep state theory I've never really bought into, but there's a lot of people out there that are taking their agenda and running wild with it.
Deep state sits alongside fake news as the catchphrases of the Trump presidency, oft repeated by the president and his backers.
Proof the deep state is real in America and that you, the American people, see what is really going on.
It's about a deep state trying to drag a crook across the presidential finish line and trying to destroy the man Americans wanted in the Oval Office.
There are other Republican senators up here whose allegiance is more to the deep state than it is to the president.
Trump's definition of deep state goes beyond the intelligence agencies. He includes those in any government departments who are secretly working against him, either appointed by the previous administration or just opposed to his agenda.
Unelected deep state operatives who defy the voters to push their own secret agendas are truly a threat to democracy itself.
And he may have cause to be concerned. There have been more leaks from the Trump White House than any other administration, and an exodus of senior officials.
Government tends to be resistant to political change because government has its own opinions, and those working in governments have their own opinions. And so this idea of a deep state sort of confuses what is natural bureaucratic resistance.
But the alleged deep state attacks began well before Trump took the oath of office. The FBI spied on members of the Trump campaign, an apparently unprecedented measure.
They got wiretaps on former campaign officials. They ran informants on former campaign officials. And they also worked, it wasn't just the FBI, the FBI also worked with the CIA. Former CIA Director John Brennan has personally taken credit for helping to generate the Russia investigation and for supplying it with information. So their intrusion into domestic politics was unprecedented, and we're still waiting for accountability.
The main battle between Trump and the deep state has been centered on a Russia conspiracy theory. Its followers believe Donald Trump is a Manchurian candidate, a puppet of President Putin.
The entire thing has been a witch hunt.
With disputable evidence of a tenuous Trump-Russia connection, the FBI launched an inquiry. And for more than 2 years, US mainstream media breathlessly spruiked Trump's downfall.
Breaking news.
A bombshell.
Another bombshell out of the White House.
Breaking news, a new bombshell.
Today was a turning point.
A turning point.
We're at a turning point here.
I believe this is the beginning of the end.
I do too.
It's really the beginning of the end.
He may be feeling the walls closing in on him.
All the walls closing in on him.
The walls closing in on him.
One astrologer says this means the beginning of the end for President Donald Trump.
Dozens of lawyers and FBI agents spent 23 months and $32 million investigating. The FBI laid 199 charges against 37 people and companies, but, crucially, found no evidence of Americans colluding with Russia. A victory, Trump claimed, against an attempted deep state coup.
Is that deep state or what? Explain it. It's the most incredible thing people have ever seen, what's going on, but we're going to straighten it out.
Now Democrats are attempting to impeach President Trump, claiming he acted inappropriately by suggesting to the Ukrainian president that he investigate Joe Biden and his son's questionable behavior in Ukraine. Details of the now notorious Trump-Zelensky phone call were leaked by a CIA agent temporarily working in the White House.
The Democrats, the media, and the deep state are desperate to stop us. They want to stop us because they know we are here, and that's what we're doing, and that's what's taken up so much time.
Well, you hear a lot about it, but is there such a thing as a deep state? You bet there is. And though it's been around a long time, it's never been as obvious, as identifiable, or as desperate as it is now. Now, the deep state is not really so much left or right, conservative or liberal. No, it's more about protecting the self-serving institutions of government at all cost. And the reason it wasn't obvious, or that you never really heard much about a shadow government that really ran things, was because no one had ever threatened their power. Administrations came and went, both Democrat and Republican. And for all the fiery rhetoric during an election, only minor policy changes ever took place within administrations. The notable exception was the more disruptive policies during the Reagan administration that actually were successful in ending the Cold War. Not just ending it, but winning it. Now, the experts of foreign policy then, they hated Reagan. They sought to undermine his aggressive stance against communism. And frankly, behind the scenes, they leaked stories to the media to make it appear that Reagan was a dangerous, ignorant cowboy that were going to cause America to get into a nuclear war. But his 8 years were actually the most peaceful in several generations. And his instincts to defeat communism, rather than to merely coexist with it, proved to be right. Donald Trump represented a very real and a different kind of threat to the deep state establishment. In the past, even a president with clear principles was still dependent upon the same donor pool to get elected and stay elected. And the donor pool that funds the status quo has typically been able to keep things pretty much the same, regardless if the leaders are Democrat or Republican. It was good business for what President Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex. Well, along comes Donald Trump, who funded his own campaign with his own money. He's the first president in my lifetime to get nominated and elected without being owned and obligated to the mega donors of the D.C. power circle and the special interests that they represent. That independence is a clear and present danger to the swamp rats of Washington, and they are fighting back with a vengeance. So when you see a parade of diplomats or military people on Trump-hating CNN or other media outlets, never forget that an underlying mandate of our constitutional republic is that the ultimate power is to be vested with we, the people. There is a glaring reason that a civilian president is the commander-in-chief of the military, and that foreign policy is solely vested in the president, not in the career bureaucrats and diplomats of the State Department. No one, and I mean no one, elected the bureaucrats or the government employees or even the generals to make policy decisions. You see, our founders wanted the power to wage war and to deal with foreign governments to be led by those elected by and therefore accountable to the people. Anything else, we'd be ruled by unelected and unknown bosses who didn't choose to stand for election. And because President Trump has openly defied conventional norms for conducting military and foreign policy, the entire deep state has come undone. No one has ever threatened their ironclad control, and they're going berserk to preserve and to protect their kingdom at the expense of yours. So just remember this one important truth. The deep state hates Donald Trump. They will stop at nothing to impeach him, defeat him, and destroy him. But what they really fear is that you will find out about them and demand that the deep state gets dismantled and that we have a government that really does exist for and which serves we, the people.
All right, the president now is reacting to a flood of information coming out about how the deep state targeted and, in fact, spied on his campaign. On Twitter earlier today, he wrote, "Look how things have turned around on the criminal deep state. They go after phony collusion with Russia and a made-up scam and end up getting caught in a major spy scandal, the likes of which this country may have never seen before. What goes around comes around." We've been saying that. Didn't we call this the year of the boomerang? It's exactly what this is. You have a criminal deep state, and it's all coming out at breakneck speed. Now, it's literally hour by hour, the things that we're learning. It's new and it's damning. The details are unbelievable. The president slamming the entire scandal and giving it a new nickname. This is the tip of the iceberg. Take a look.
We now call it Spygate. You're calling it Spygate. A lot of bad things have happened. I want them all to get together. They'll sit in a room. Hopefully they'll be able to work it out among themselves.
Thank you. Got to be honest, I'm worried about these people blowing whistles all night long. I don't know what's going to happen.
I love your opening monologue because it you know, the day the story broke about the whistleblower,
yeah.
I wrote a column that said... I wrote a column that said the whistleblower is not a whistleblower.
Yeah.
He's not a whistleblower under the law. If you read the law, it's got to be, you have to be blowing the whistle at intelligence activity, which this wasn't, and you have to blow the whistle on somebody in the intelligence community. Well, the president's not in the intelligence community. They report to him.
This new book called Witch Hunt, what you talk about is that the origin of this was not just some people who loved their country and trying to make sure it was okay. These were people on a mission,
right.
A mission to destroy an elected president. Right. I mean, is that a fair assessment? Has that really happened?
Yeah, no. They wanted to, first they wanted to stop him from becoming president. Then once he was unexpectedly elected, they wanted to drive him from office and undo the election results. And people always ask, well, why would they do this?
Let's talk about who they are.
They are, you know, a lot of people call them the deep state. I call it a malignant force. That's how I open the book. These are people. Thank you. These are people in the intelligence community, the FBI, the Department of Justice, the State Department. They are people of like mind. They are all addicted to power. Trump was a threat to them because he promised to drain the swamp. The swamp didn't want to be drained. You know, power in Washington is like crack cocaine. You know, I mean, once you start, you don't want to stop. You don't want to give it up. You'll do anything to make sure that it keeps going.
Greg, there are thousands of people in the intelligence community and in law enforcement, Department of Justice, FBI. What percentage are the bad guys? Because I don't want to disparage all of those people. There are some fantastic public servants, people who have sacrificed really their entire lives to serve this country. So, you know, I know we're not talking about everyone in the intel community, not everyone in the FBI or Justice Department. What would be your guess of the percentage of people that we ought to be worried about that have really stepped across the line and threatened this republic of ours?
It's a small cabal at the top of, at the time, the FBI, James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, others as well, with a like-minded cabal at the CIA headed by John Brennan and the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. I mean, I name names in the book, and I go through in meticulous detail their malicious, insidious acts, their insipid lies and deceptions, and the corruption that was so endemic in their administration of their agencies.
Adam Schiff, for over 2 years, said, we have the evidence. And he kept talking about that he had the evidence.
Yeah,
and then the Mueller report came out and they found out he didn't have anything.
Right.
So when he says now that it's the Ukraine situation, why shouldn't we trust him?
You know, Adam Schiff is the professor emeritus of lies. And so this is a man, you know, if Democrats are really serious about what they're doing, the first thing they need to do is dump Schiff.
By the way, do you think that the attorney general will get to the bottom of what really happened? And will people be held accountable? Because this really truly has been a threat to our system of government.
You know, I have great confidence in William Barr, the attorney general. He cares about one thing, upholding the rule of law, that nobody is above the law, nobody's below the law, and he's assigned probably the best prosecutor in the United States in terms of getting at corruption in U.S. Attorney John Durham, who I live in Connecticut. He's my U.S. attorney up there. This is a man who has put FBI and CIA people behind bars. He will get to the bottom of it.
One of the things that I admire most about your writing is that you document. You don't just say, I heard, I think, I believe,
it
may have happened, or somebody told me. You cite the source, you quote the source, you footnote the source, and it's what makes this book so powerful. If people want to understand all of these myriad of things that they're hearing, I highly recommend that they get this book, Witch Hunt, by Greg Jarrett.
Response to that Donald Trump interview I showed you yesterday has been pretty strong. There's been a lot of focus on pandemic management and the high death rate in the US, although I think the president has succeeded in drawing attention to how many other developed nations have suffered much heavier death rates from COVID-19. Joe Biden focused on this in the past 24 hours, using social media to pin responsibility for the pandemic crisis in the US on Donald Trump. And the Democrat candidate also tweeted this: "Every day it becomes clearer we are in a battle for the soul of this nation, who we are, what we believe, who we want to be. It's all at stake. We have to vote Donald Trump out this November." So there you go. The main message, of course, is to get rid of Trump. That's all we've heard for 3.5 years. But is Joe Biden the man to do it? I'm joined now by former Democrat White House staffer Barbara Heinebach from Wollongong. Thanks for joining us, Barbara. Really good to talk to you.
And you, Chris.
A lot of concerns about Joe Biden's ability, his mental capacity to get out there and argue the case and even debate Donald Trump. How do you assess it?
I would say that Biden's pluses are the fact that the Democrats, and especially the Democratic National Committee, they want Trump out no matter what or by whatever means necessary. And his other strong strength is the fact that he has most of national media behind him. His weakness: Biden has been a politician for some 45, darn near 50 years. He has no strong strength or anything to point to for what he has achieved. In addition to that, he also has these lapses of memory, and his cognitive abilities are really weakening. The Democrats who are dyed in the wool are going to vote for him anyway. So despite what he's done with his, you know, his wheeling and dealing, I don't think that's going to hurt him with those that are for him. So it's really...
My guest today is John Michael Mulvaney, better known as Mick Mulvaney. Mick served in the South Carolina House, the South Carolina Senate, won a tough race for Congress in 2010, and we met during orientation in the fall of 2010 and were colleagues and, more importantly, friends, and we remain friends to this day. As you know, Mick left Congress to head up the OMB and then later become chief of staff for the president, where he served until a couple of months ago. Mick is married to Pam, and they have three now college-age triplets. Welcome, Mick. How are you?
Trevor, I am doing absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much. But look forward to this for a long time.
Tell us how life has been since you returned to South Carolina.
Are you going to let that go? Seriously, I call you by the wrong name, and you're going to let that go?
This is the new me. It doesn't bother me. This is the new me. The little slights like that don't bother me. Mark?
Who's Mark?
How has life been since you returned to South Carolina?
Oh, it's been good. It's been, you know, I've got the 20-year-old triplets are home for the summer. We didn't expect to have that. So there is a silver lining to being locked down for COVID. I have been home now for 5 months. The last time that happened was in 2006. I'm pretty sure my wife is ready for me to go back to Washington, D.C. or someplace else soon. But it's been nice. And then I've got, as you know, your dad and my dad are friends. My dad has had some health issues the last couple of years. So it's been nice to have some time to spend some time with my folks, as they, you know, try and stay as safe as they possibly can. So all things considered, more time with family, more time in South Carolina is never a bad thing.
Amen to that. We are glad to have you home. Do you miss... I cannot imagine what it was like to work really at the epicenter of politics for the world, which is the White House. And I don't mean to discount other important cities, but if you like politics, Washington is the center of all of that. It's the Jerusalem of politics. And you were at the White House and you're the chief of staff for the commander in chief. And then you go to being kind of a part-time farmer in Indian Land, South Carolina. What has the transition been like?
you're making fun of my farming now? Is that what this is that?
It's a pretty small farm.
March was you go from doing what I was doing to being locked down for coronavirus at home, and instead of my ordinary 10 tomato plants this year, I have planted 105. So by the way, they're coming in. So next time I see you to play golf, I will bring tomatoes with you, or for you. Oh, listen, it's the transition has been great. The job was absolutely fabulous. I was very pleased to do the transition the way that we did. You know, the media will always portray it as a stunning move, a shocking move, and that is nothing could be further from the truth. The president actually, when he hired me, asked me to take 6 months away from the Office of Management and Budget to see if I could turn around the West Wing, the sort of the way that I had turned around the CFPB, or at least go in and sort of mix things up. Previous leadership at the West Wing had left things sort of out of kilter. And the president asked me to come in, and instead of 6 months, I stayed for 14. But he and I both knew the job wasn't going to last forever. I was only ever the acting chief of staff. And I was just glad that, we both agreed that Mark Meadows would make a great next chief of staff. Mark is a friend of mine. He's a friend of yours. He helped me founded the Freedom Caucus together, something you were never conservative enough to be a member of, as I recall. So we go back, Mark and I go back to 2012 is when he joined Congress. So no, that I could not script it up any better. I'm very happy to have the gig I have now. I've actually asked for the Northern Ireland's Irish Special Envoy back in December of 2018 when I was in the Oval Office. The president said, well, maybe that can wait. How about Chief of Staff? So that was that's an interesting conversation to have. So no, it's the transition has been good on all fronts.
You know, I was actually on the phone with the president today. And the first question I asked him is, are we prepared to go to war with Northern Ireland, which is what I think is going to happen when you actually get over there? Have you been yet? Have they met you yet?
See, and that's why we don't let you near anything having to do with diplomacy. Because ordinarily, typically, first, there's a couple small requisites. Number one, you have to be able to find it on a map. and then you have to be able to recognize whether or not it's a separate country. And of course, I'm not sure you're able to do that with Northern Ireland. Can you guess which hemisphere it's in?
It's near Europe, I think. It's near England. Isn't that where Bono's from?
Bono is from the Republic of Ireland. Yes, different country, same island.
Yeah, I was close.